wise man once said a true history of the world is a history of great conversations and elegant rooms. This is not one of those conversations. Welcome back to The Way We Nerd.
Yeah!
Last week, it was we were down a couple men, but we have everybody back here. Sitting to my right is the man who drinks and knows stuff.
Tyrion, but also Josh. Morehead.
And diagonal from me, like Jon Snow, he has returned from the dead and headed back home.
Danny Villalobos.
And across from me, he's back from New York, but he is still wearing his underoos.
Joshua Potter.
Underoos!
Welcome back, everybody.
Woo. Thank you, Kyle Bound and Josh Morehead. We missed you guys.
Yeah.
We missed you guys.
Yeah,
I
maybe.
Love that.
I was hanging out with a bunch of hot country girls at Stagecoach where there was nothing but Daisy Duke shorts and boots, and oh my God.
And that was just Dan.
That was just me in the mirror. But yes, it was
well,
a good,
I was hanging
was a
out with
time.
Pictures of those girls.
That's good too. That's good too. Aww.
The most truthful thing you will hear tonight. On this podcast.
Anyway, yeah, I heard, unfortunately, I feel like an ass. I haven't listened to last week's episode yet, but I will. But I heard Josh queued me up for a few things and realized, oh, wait, he's not here.
He was pushing some buttons that were not present.
Yeah. Well, before we came on, Josh was pushing my buttons already, so we're probably going to get some of that today. I'm going to take over leading you now, Kyle, because I wrote everything down here for us to talk about.
Go for it, because I have no idea what we're talking about.
Okay, good. Well, you know some of these things.
I do.
Let's just get, because there's two, I'm just going to say what it is. We're going to obviously talk about Captain America Civil War, because all four of us have seen it now.
Yes.
I've been waiting to talk to you guys about this, obviously, for 3 weeks, so it's
dear
exciting.
God, yes.
And, of course, the newest Game of Thrones episode. So that's probably going to dominate the pod, so we're going to get a few little stories out in the beginning. Just a little piece of news that excited myself today, and kind of Kyle. Krypton, that show we talked about a couple weeks ago, the story about Superman's grandpa, right?
Yep, Superman's grandfather.
Kal-El's grandfather has been ordered to pilot. Doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be made, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
And that pilot does look like it's going to be expensive unless they tailor down that script a little bit. But
yeah, we'll see.
Well, I don't.
I don't. Sci-fi.
We'll see,
I mean,
how they tell the story of Papa L, which is what I'm going to call him.
That's the thing. And sci-fi looked good when they were doing Stargate. Like it, for the amount of budget that Stargate got, it was a pretty good looking show.
Well, and Battlestar Galactica was amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Battlestar.
But it was almost all on stage. You know, they didn't go out into some alien. Yeah. I mean, this will have to be basically all on stage.
It will be, too. There'll be a few exterior shots. And I hope they use matte paintings a lot in this stuff, too. So
they could, or toss it to Rainmaker, who did the effects for Stargate. They do a great
job. Definitely.
And
Stargate.
Reboots.
Definitely.
If you didn't know, they started with Reboots.
Stargate. So,
it's a great show.
Another TV news.
Reboot the animated.
Yes, Reboot the animated series.
I remember
series.
That show.
Rainmaker
vaguely.
Did that. Yep.
Interesting.
Wait, what animated series?
Reboot.
Did you never watch Reboot?
It was this anime, like this early 3D animation.
I know
show.
Reboot.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But I just thought he meant they reboot an animated series.
Oh, no,
I
was
Although there is talk about rebooting Reboot.
Yeah.
No, there's not.
I hope not.
Now that we've been sufficiently
sidetracked. Nobody's talking about that.
No, that's fine. It's just, it's more TV talk. And,
what was
and
the bad guy's name on that? Megabyte?
Megabyte, hexadecimal,
Now the bad guy would just be called Porn Virus.
What
it would just be wandering titties.
Tornado. That's what they call those. The tornado.
Walking back to the main path.
you'd have GameCubes drop in.
Or
like,
not.
Like Candy Crush. And I don't know what else.
So
porn.
Other stuff. And porn, apparently.
It would have to be on HBO.
Yep.
The other small TV news I wanted to bring up was it comes from the world of Netflix. You know, everybody's talking about this superhero bubble's going to burst eventually, and it probably is, but it's still expanding. It may not be.
Netflix is doing everything they can to make it happen as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Yes.
It may have peaked. It may have peaked, but it's definitely it's steady right now. And we have our first spinoff from the four Netflix series that we're on. We haven't even got friggin' Iron Fist or Luke Cage, but Punisher. Gonna get a spinoff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it makes sense.
I finally finished the Daredevil season,
man, it's
I love the second season a lot. I know a lot of people were. I mean, I know Josh, you're more of a fan of Jessica Jones than Daredevil.
Well,
not saying that Daredevil's bad, but
yeah,
but you
I thought
think
it
it's
was
a tighter show. Like it's
yeah,
it's because Daredevil does have a tendency to have lulls in the middle there because they're trying to fill in stuff. But
when I just, Jessica Jones would go to its side characters, I wasn't instantly like out of everything and appalled.
Yeah.
But like there's sometimes when Daredevil goes to his side beats and it's all like, I can't, it just feels desperate. Like you can read it as they don't know what to do with the character when what's your face has like four jobs in a season.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
they're throwing her against a wall and you shouldn't do that to women.
So, no, I feel that.
But the brilliant stuff is, I mean, I'm going to say this was Civil War when we get there, too.
And oh, yeah. Said it well, no, we're going to get there, like, yeah.
The brilliant stuff is so brilliant that you want to forgive the rest of it. Which
yeah.
just sounds like I'm in a bad marriage with all comic book stuff.
Maybe no, 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 not at all. You're in a normal American marriage is what you're in. But the Punisher, John Bernthal, like, I could spend hours with that dude. Like, I like the Elektra stuff, too, but I was more into Punisher's story this time around.
He's engaging. He's great in everything he does.
So. Yeah.
I don't know if you saw Fury, the movie.
I did.
About
I
tanks.
Love Fury. I forgot it was him.
Fantastic. Yeah. And he's, yeah.
Fury's a really good movie. But anyway, so we got. I don't know if he's going to be the part of the Defenders, though. I don't know how. I can't see him doing that. Because he's not really a team up guy.
No, he might pop in and blow a couple guys away and then pop back out.
Maybe. But I don't want them to be, without giving too much away, I don't want Daredevil and Punisher to be friends. They've never been friends. They shouldn't be friends. Sometimes they team up because it's a necessity, but Frank Castle really hates Matt Murdock, and they should keep that and take an antagonistic relationship. Carry on to the next show. All right, so... the next small bit of news I wanted to bring up, the Star Trek news I've been teasing to these guys all day. Star Trek 2 is getting a director's cut. And I'm not talking about Into Darkness. I'm talking about Wrath of Khan.
Interesting. Huh.
So for the first time in many a years, we're going to have a director's cut of one of the original series. I don't think, Potter, back me up on this. I don't think any of those original movies got a director's cut with the exception of the original motion picture.
No, right? Yeah, I think that's the only one. And the original motion picture, I think it literally just extends the V'ger sequences.
Yeah.
It makes it longer and it updates the effects a little bit.
Didn't you?
There's a lot more ship porn.
Yeah,
a lot of ship porn. Yeah.
Did you say that there's only like 3 new minutes of footage?
It's only like three or four minutes extra, yeah. Which is not like, ooh, but it's just, it's one of those movies that. It extends scenes we already like. Like, there's more banter between Kirk and Spock and McCoy. And it's just... It's little moments that we're obviously... We're never going to get again because, obviously, DeForest Kelly and Leonard have now passed.
Right.
But to be able to see new footage of them doing stuff incorporated into the movie, like, important enough that they think incorporated back to the movie will make it good, better.
I'm just saying...
Or at least get people to buy it again.
Yeah.
Which it already will.
We shouldn't talk about it longer than there actually is footage.
Okay. So, basically what I'm going to do for the rest of the show is I'm just going to introduce the next segment, and I'm going to let Josh talk the whole time. Because all he likes to do is when he... I'm sure you missed me, because now you didn't have any parades to rain on. So, there you go. Now you got... So, and we're going to bring up another piece of news that Josh thinks is just, oh, marketing ploy. They have announced that Affleck is the executive producer of Justice League now, basically taking the reins out of Zack Snyder's hands and putting it in more capable director's hands than, at least in my eyes, even though I like Zack Snyder. I know that this DC animated, DC Universe is in trouble a little bit right now with the Flash, losing the Flash director and BVS's negative reactions. But that news, regardless of where it's timed and just if they want to be part of the news cycle, that's fine. That excites me.
I think it's great news. I just thought the timing of it, the announcement was interesting. I have no problem with the announcement at all. I'm excited about it.
I mean, didn't they start shooting it already?
They did, but apparently what makes this interesting is the fact that, Affleck, you know that negative, that meme was out there that, of Affleck's reaction to the negative reviews.
Sad Affleck. Which is still funny.
Sad Affleck. I mean, oh, yeah, that's funny. Just funny. And it is funny. No, it's great. And the funny thing is that he was so upset at those reviews that he actually went to Warner Brothers and said, what the fuck? You know, like, give me more fucking control here. You guys don't know what you're doing. And basically to appease him. I guess he got upset also that they announced.
Is that true? Like,
yes. I just read this. Well, this is rumors. Obviously, this is inside. Sources say. So
right.
Take it for a grain of salt. But yeah, he went in there and he was really upset. He was also upset at the head of Warner Brothers announcing him as the director of Batman before the negotiations had finished.
Ooh.
So there was a couple things there they had to do to appease Ben Affleck. So the only reason I say it's not as much of a timing thing.
I saw him storming across the lot wearing his armor. So
he was
that's what was going on. Yeah.
So what's it, Kevin, what's the head of Warner Brothers?
Sugihara.
Sugihara, yeah. So,
full disclosure, we work for a television show owned by Warner Brothers.
It's also the best thing they can do. I mean, like, they ran out with the directing news before it was finalized, apparently.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to make us happy. Everybody said that the best thing about the movie was Batfleck.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to say it's going more in the Batfleck direction. I'm just saying, like, anybody that works in PR or whatever knows there's strategery to making announcements.
I mean, either...
There is, but I don't think they were sitting on
the
story.
So here's the thing, though. Either they made this decision earlier, before the movie started shooting, and decided to announce it now, or they made the decision after the movie started shooting and it's not going to have much of an effect on the actual movie.
Well, I think that's true.
Story-wise or script-wise or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like, if they made this decision 2 days ago, beyond the directing, there's not a whole lot that he's going to be able to
input. The most interesting thing
right
in the blurb
No,
said,
it was just to appease him.
Well, no, so the blurb that I read said that... yeah, they're already in the midst of directing it, so it's not like he's a co-director.
No.
He's very much a co-EP in the sense that, like, he can give notes on the script.
Yeah.
And on the shooting days when he's there, obviously.
Yeah.
And the main thing I took away from it was that he's going to be in the editing days.
Okay.
Which... So it's a lot of post-work, and, you know...
That makes sense, which, and I'm okay with that.
Because a lot of people complained about the editing in BVS, which I don't think I had. The
technical filmmaking side of the technical filmmaking of the movie is fantastic. It's just the story that was convoluted and
less than stellar.
Exactly. And the funny thing is like both Eisenberg and Affleck and all the, well, Affleck hasn't said it out in public, but Eisenberg and a few other people have said when I read that script, it was amazing.
Yeah.
So the script that I read didn't get made is basically what they're saying.
Yeah.
You know, which
my whole point was just it's a minor thing, but it's like, I don't think they sat on the news. I think they got the news and they should have sat on it, is what I'm saying.
And waited for a while.
Because when you release the news on the same day that Civil War is pulling in its box office and getting its great reviews and everything, you just look like...
Look at us.
Right, it's a little desperate. They would have been better waiting for today.
But only about 1% of the people on this planet will see it that way. That's why it works.
It's inside baseball.
Exactly.
Yeah.
99% of the people are just going to see it as news, not as any kind of ploy. But you're right. That is very true. But that's what marketers do, and that's what they get paid to do. All right. So we'll move on from that and move this. Do you guys want to do? I'm going to ask you guys right now. You guys want to talk about Game of Thrones first or Captain America first?
Yes.
Let's do Game of Thrones first.
Yeah, because Game of Thrones first. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So Game of Thrones.
Jon Snow is back.
Jon Snow is
what? I haven't seen it.
Oops. I'm just kidding. I have. It's fine. Yeah, big spoilers.
Really?
I've seen. Okay, good. Yeah, big spoilers on this.
Yeah,
it's
but
too late now. But
and the great thing is just a little side note, and I'm gonna tell these guys too if they haven't seen it. Go watch the SNL skit they did.
Oh yeah,
for Jon Snow, it was pretty friggin' hilarious. Like the way they made fun of the the guy kept the worst secret. The worst secret since Benedict Cumberbatch is not playing Khan, or is playing Khan, and is in Hollywood. So. But what else did you guys think about that episode? Besides, we'll get to Jon Snow, but the rest of it, like, I'm still hoping we someday get a prequel series that with the Mad King and young Ned.
I'm glad you brought this up because I was telling Kyle earlier, actually, I need this explained to me. I thought that scene was cool because there were swords and shit.
Yeah.
But,
so,
like, what did that mean?
So, the short explanation is, in that tower, so while this is going on, you know, King's Landing is being taken over, et cetera, right? The rebellion's working.
Yeah.
or has worked, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
What they don't show you this, but for some reason, Eddard Stark is there. Right?
Right.
Now, that reason, you hear the scream from the tower at the end of the fight.
Right.
The theory is that up in that tower is his sister, Lyanna.
Right.
And that she is giving birth to her son, Jon Snow.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Who is also Rhaegar Targaryen's son.
Which is what they've been...
And therefore, the rightful heir to the Iron Throne.
So, and she's the statue lady in the basement.
She is the statue lady in the basement, yes.
She
is the reason Robert's rebellion started.
Yeah. Because Robert was in love with her.
Yes.
Okay.
And she was kidnapped by Rhaegar Targaryen.
Yeah. And supposedly
I'm using quotation marks there because she probably actually was in love with him and had the baby with him consensually.
But
Robert's story is he was kidnapped and raped.
But Robert, right. She was betrothed to Robert and he was in love with her and he became king of the Seven Kingdoms to save her and was not able to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The winners tell history. So that's that's the history.
That's really moving.
Yeah.
Although I understand it.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That's
Now, well,
I mean she's like, she said, I mean, Ned says it too. His character says it to the, like, where is she or I'm coming to get her. Memphis is her, but it's
this is what I mean when I like when I say I watch this show like a child. Because I can feel the shadows of what's going on, but I didn't until you explained it to me.
Was it this episode though that we saw the younger her talking to Ned and...
That was the second episode. Yes, that was,
we found
was
out
with young Hodor who could talk at the time.
We found out, what's his name again? Wallace? No.
Willis.
What are you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, I like the theory I read...
Hodor.
I like the theory that I read about him this week, which is that he can only say Hodor now or whatever because he's whatever you call the people that can spend time in animals.
Warg.
Not like animal fuckers, but like
sexually inside, but yeah, like and he mentally.
spent too much time in his horse, and the horse got killed on top of that, and it screwed up his brain.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I guess in the books he's described his horse like a lot, and people are always like this fucking horse.
Shit, well, Bran's always riding him,
right? Yeah, so, you know, he's a horseman.
Yeah, steed.
Yeah.
Fucking Bran Steed. So anyway,
and the interesting thing is they sort of, it seems like they don't want Bran to know before Jon finds out,
right?
Which is why they sort of cut that out. So if you're a fan who's been paying a lot of attention, or you read the books or whatever, you know, you sort of piece that together because it's the thing you've been expecting
okay,
for a little while now. Because Melisandre references him having, you know, some sort of noble blood. And there's sort of other hints to it at other points.
Here's my other question. Maybe this is a good way for us to review episodes. It's me not understanding.
Absolutely.
Them. But like, okay, so I get it when bad man who killed his dad last week.
Ramsay.
Like, yeah, he was being bad.
That fucking
guy. Yeah.
Oh,
man. He's going to get the most satisfying death.
He's not going to kill the baby. No, he's not going to kill the baby.
He didn't kill the baby. The dogs killed the baby.
I told my brother that, too.
The dingo ate your baby.
So which Stark is that they brought to him?
Because
I don't remember that. I don't remember
him. He's the youngest.
Yes.
But where was he?
He was
before?
He was one of the. Remember when Theon killed those two kids and said it was Rincon and Bran? Remember in the very, very first season? There was two dead kids that were supposed to be the Stark.
Well, I remember
kids.
That whore, because that's what she is.
Yeah, there was Nymphadora Tonks.
Was Theon's girlfriend.
Oh my god, that is Nymphadora Tonks.
She is, she's Tonks.
Oh shit.
So
Tonks,
because I cannot remember her name. She hasn't been on in like a season.
Right.
No.
So Tonks, Hodor,
Bran,
and
Rickon.
Riker. Riggins. Commander Riker.
Yep.
Rickon.
They all escape from Winterfell after the Greyjoys take it.
Yeah.
And then they split up. Hodor and What's-His-Face head north.
Yeah.
And
Rincon and Tonks the other way.
They had elsewhere.
But can we talk about this for a second? Holy crap, those kids grew up fast.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's been like two seasons.
It's been 2 years. But yeah, he grows like a foot every like day.
Dude,
Bran
looks like a different person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ratchet Rincon looks like a different person. I didn't know who it was either when they fucking first took his thing off.
The other thing about the flashback to know is that the guy who was with Stark.
The Stabby?
He died. I think he died, right?
Which guy?
Mira's dad. Didn't he die there? Or is he the guy who got stabby at the end?
I don't remember.
Not 100% sure which one of them is.
I have to go back and watch it again.
Me too, because I thought everybody died, and then he stabbed him, and then I couldn't remember which one he stabbed. Yeah. But one of the guy,
the
so
knife, the knife to the back.
Yeah. Ned was fighting the guy.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the guy who stabbed him is Mira's father. And Mira.
Oh, it's Jamie who stabbed that guy in the back.
No.
No.
No, no, no.
Yes, it is. That was Jamie.
Because he's like,
no, because the.
No, no. The one who stabbed the guy in the back to save Ned.
Right.
That's Jamie.
Is it?
Yes.
They never say that.
No, they don't, but that's him. My brother and I were around it like three times.
That makes sense.
No, we were around it three times. To see is we knew it was Jamie because the way he looked, but I was like, was that actually the actor playing him? Because they obviously had somebody else playing young Ned. That was Jamie, dude. That was 100% Jamie. Well, if not, it's a guy.
Is it Jamie in King's Landing?
Not at this time because remember he's with. Remember him and Ned were fighting together when they were doing the rebellion.
Huh.
Remember him, Robert, and Ned,
they were all like together. Too, so did he?
Yeah, but he was. And that's the thing. I think he. Oh, you're
I don't
right.
think that's him. I think that's.
It looked a lot like
I think that's Mira's dad. And Mira is the girl who's up there with Bran.
Wow, this is really confusing.
So her father
like
was there.
Jamie.
Gotcha.
With Ned.
Because remember what when Bran said, this guy's way better than my father. This isn't the way that I was told the story.
Yes.
Right.
And then that guy stabbed the dude in the back. So I'm thinking to myself, I don't know. That guy looks exactly like Jamie. If not, that they
got somebody.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's probably not. Maybe
I don't
it's not
know.
Jamie.
One of the people there.
But you know what?
Is
you just
said
makes sense
because
Jamie's supposed to be up with the king.
I was just disappointed that in that flashback we didn't see like one of them build C-3PO. You know? That's how prequels.
Or did
really
we?
Done.
Hold on, before we get all silly, did we? Has the king been killed by this point?
That's what confused me.
Because doesn't the rebellion start with them killing the king?
No.
Okay. No,
there was
no they fight. They basically fight their way south, is my understanding, and they get support as they go. And then they.
Damn it, I'm
gonna
have to watch
Landing.
This episode again too.
And then Jamie's like, "Holy shit, the king wants to kill everybody!" Stab.
Safe to say, overall, it was awesome though.
It's a great episode.
No, it's a great episode. There's a lot to talk about in it.
And
so there's also. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna. Maybe I'm rushing it, but like I was really obviously Jon Snow coming back, not a surprise. Is a surprise. Him walking away from it all.
Yes, yes. Because the thing I was expecting was he comes back to life. Now he has the whatever the fuck they're called, the Night's Watch behind him.
And the Wildlings.
He has the Wildlings behind him. He can go and take Winterfell. You know, he can basically just fucking wreak havoc heading south.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the rightful heir to both Stark and Targaryen. Without,
right.
He doesn't know that yet, but it would have been really easy for Melisandre to then tell him that, you know, and for this to come out and for him to start building his arm, because at some point he's going to have to.
What?
Right.
Or you would even expect him to stay there because he has to be the one to fight off the White Walkers. But to just essentially abandon ship and just be like, peace, I'm out. I'm going south.
And that,
I don't even give a fuck anymore.
Yeah.
That totally shows that he's going to be the one that ends up on the throne, because it's always the most satisfying stories is like the hero that
someone who doesn't want the power
that doesn't want it is the one that most deserves.
I mean, I always thought that was really clever in Harry Potter when he finds the stone in the first movie, and Dumbledore says only the person who wanted to find the stone, not use it, is the one who finds it. It's, you're totally right, Josh. I think it's because Jon Snow has always been even the reluctant hero in general,
mm-hmm.
and it's that's why he's so interesting and fun to watch. But it's two things about Jon Snow. Number one, I love that we finally got to see Ollie's neck stretched.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it. I hate that I revel in the death of a kid who actually isn't that bad of a person. He's just misled.
Well, that felt like a...
But I thought he was going to save him, and I was like, please don't save
him.
Well,
that's another reason why the show's so good, because that felt like almost like a Breaking Bad moment for me, where it's like it's a horrible decision to make, but you have to make it. As I'm watching, I'm like, would I let the kid go?
Yeah.
Because it's a kid. And
he
looks
like
he's
thought
around.
About it almost.
Yeah, he was thinking about it.
But if you
do,
he comes back in the final act and stabs you.
Yeah, if you do, he comes back 20 years and kills you again.
Yeah.
You got to...
You made the right decision.
Yeah.
You
got to make the hard decision. Yeah.
The other interesting thing about Jon Snow leaving is... And he, you know, he said... I think he says, my watch is ended.
That's exactly what he says. My watch is ended.
And
it did. Because the oath is until your death. Not until your death, and then if you're revived, you continue serving.
Right.
Oh,
like legally, he can leave.
Yeah,
I would argue.
Yeah, I didn't think about that until you said that.
And that, and that's the argument I'm sure he'll use when they say, "Hey, you still got to come back." He's like, "No, I'm dead.
I died
in the service of my
the ultimate fucking loophole.
You motherfuckers all killed me. Yeah. All right, pretty sure my shit's done."
Yeah.
Now that was the second thing I was going to bring. I'm glad you said that, Kyle, because I almost forgot. It's interesting to me because everybody was like theorizing, like, would Jon Snow come back darker? Would he come back evil? Would he come back as a different person? You know, so far he seems just to be the same Jon Snow.
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes.
He has been changed by it, but not in the his personality changed or who he is changed.
Yeah.
But in the he went through some shit.
Yeah.
Well, he essentially remembers his own death.
He remembers his own death. He died, and there was nothing. There was nothing on the other side of that for him.
Yeah.
You know, but so now he's got that. He was betrayed by his own people.
Yeah.
Like, he's got all this shit he's got to work through. But he's still the same Jon Snow.
Yeah, but beyond emotional baggage, I would put all my money on at some point in the season him having, like, nigga Snow inside. Like, or, like, a flourish in his eyes where he's like, I just did something kind of weird. Because it wasn't, like, it was the demon baby that brought him back. The demon baby god, not, like... the cool god.
It's not going to be interesting if he is the same Jon Snow completely. Right. I just don't want to lose. I don't want him to lose some of the nobility that he has, and I like because he seems like one of the most honorable characters in the
show. I think he'll be that fighting the power that brought him back,
right? Overcoming.
Yeah.
That's a good.
I mean, the thing is, it is called A Song of Ice and Fire.
Right. Yeah.
And he is part Stark and part Targaryen.
Yeah.
Yep. Fire and ice.
So, just saying.
Who
else? There was Arya.
Okay, that was going to say.
Arya got her sight back.
Yes.
I still like Arya's story. I know people were saying they were getting kind of...
I'm getting kind of fed up with it.
I'm okay with the story, but here's my
problem. I guess I just like the actress.
It's so... Like, his offer to her of, like, if a girl tells me her name, she'll get to eat tonight. If a girl tells me her name, she'll get a warm place to sleep. If a girl tells me her name, she'll get her sight back. It's all such, like, the second she says no to those, he's like, oh, okay, here's food and come stay back at the castle.
Yeah.
Oh, you're still no one? Oh, okay, well, here's your sight.
Yeah.
And it just seemed so easy. Like, it was obvious that all you have to do is just keep saying, a girl is no one, a girl is no one. A girl is no.
I mean, they stretched it out for a while, but she was getting the shit beat out of her.
I think that the thing is, and maybe it's not landing hard enough, or it's just too corny to you. But it's basically she has to believe it, not just say it.
Yes, but
this dude can kind of sense if she's really.
But the right, but the offer that he's giving her is not...
It's a false choice.
Yeah, it's not enough that she's ever going to say, I'm fucking Arya Stark, give me the food and my sight back, because...
Welcome to religion, son.
Like, he's going to do it anyway. And you know he's going to do it anyway. And she knows he's going to do it anyway. These, like, offers of bullshit are...
I get your point. But I think that's just a function of television, where they have to get... Because of people like me, my biggest problem with that storyline was just how... browbeating it was. It reminded me of last season when, like, we had to watch, like, dudes screw 7-year-olds before she stabbed them in the face. Like,
that's what it needed was more of that. Like, it's over the course of 3 episodes, she's gone from being a beggar to being trained again to being back in the temple or whatever you call it, being trained even better, to getting her sight back and being back. You know, if he had come to her at the beginning of that first episode, if we had seen her destitute there with her bowl and he came to her and said, you know, if a girl tells me her name, she gets her sight back, and she refuses, and then you have the episode as it goes of her on the street. And
they did do that, though, didn't they?
No, because he didn't come to her until the end of the episode. Or it was the second episode that he came to her, but the beginning maybe. I don't know. It's just that there wasn't enough. He didn't make the offer multiple times. It was one offer, and then she refused it, and then he took her in. That's sort of, to me, where the easiness of it lies. Well, if it had been 2 episodes of her just things just getting shittier and shittier and shittier, and him making the offer to her 3 times over that period,
I get all that, yeah.
You know, it works better for me. It becomes a real thing instead of just, okay, we're taking a shortcut. Hey, look, she's got her sight back. Now we can get on with the story.
I just, I mean... That kind of, But he's saying they drag it out. You're saying they did it too quickly, but pretty much almost. Like, it was too easy, and he said it was too... The thing I see it as this. I still don't have any idea how much time has passed from that very first episode.
That's what I mean,
too. To where we're at now. So...
Totally.
I'm going to do it, like, within what we've seen. So, for 40 hours, basically... What season are we on? Is this 5 or 6?
Six.
So, 55 hours, Arya Stark is still do 50 hours because her dad didn't die right away. She's been consumed by this anger and this thirst for revenge. And this dude says, in order to be an assassin, you have to get rid of that. Mm-hmm. You have to separate yourself. If you want to kill these people, you have to separate yourself from that hate. So it's a really hard road and a really long test, even though it's kind of a simple one.
Yes,
to get rid of that hate and rage, and it's. That's why it's dragging
on. But it wasn't that... Yes, and I think it needed to drag... I mean, I think this is the point where it needed to be another episode or two. Even just one more episode.
You're just saying making it a little bit more difficult.
She went through all of that. She had all of that training, and then she sees one of the guys on her list. She steals a face. She does that. She goes blind. 3 episodes later, she's back and she's fine. Like, she recovered way too quickly.
I feel you.
Given everything she had gone through before... That she had made that decision, and now she's just back, and it's even less that she's back, and more that he's trusting her, you know, that he's given her sight back, that he's basically said, "All right, you're good. I believe you now." That's my biggest issue with that. Overall, I like it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just look at it as more of the blanket religious kind of aspect, and it's religious conditioning. That's what it is. She's essentially being conditioned and low level brainwashed. Into continually saying a girl is no one.
Yeah.
So that she further believes more and more, you know, that she is no one, so that she can be, you know, one of the faceless.
Yeah, just don't like
you know what? You know what? Here's my solution.
All right.
Here's my solution to this problem. Because I like to be a solutions oriented person.
That's good.
If you remember, before she went to their tower, she hid some of her things in the rocks outside of it.
Yeah.
Right.
If she had, as a blind person, gone back to those rocks, grabbed that stuff, put it at their feet, and said, you know, not you were right, I was wrong, but she probably wouldn't even have to actually say anything.
Yeah.
She puts it at her feet, you know, or puts it at their door, basically saying, you were right, I was wrong, this is what is left of me, take it from me.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that would have been a... Unless she needs it later. I mean, she, you know, I feel like ultimately she's going to become Arya Stark again. But.
Yeah, she will.
I don't know. Just throwing it out there.
She will.
That was a lot of Thrones talk, wasn't it?
That was. And we'll just end it. I wanted to ask one question because we obviously went right past her. Why do people not like Daenerys? Like, I think her story is interesting again.
Because now that
now that she's with the Dothraki again.
Yeah.
It's that point in the story where things are about to start happening, and then something goes wrong, and then there's that sidetrack, which is what this is. This is basically, it's ultimately not going to be a sidetrack because I feel like I see exactly where it's going.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys do.
I kind of do.
Where she's in Vyas Dothrak. She's going to all of the calls are coming.
Oh, yeah.
Right? To judge her.
Yeah.
She's going to stand there. She's going to be about to be judged. Maybe she is judged and judged harshly, and they're going to put her to death. And then all 3 of her fucking dragons are going to show up, and they're going to be like, holy fuck, you are the great Khaleesi.
And Tyrion's riding one of them.
Yeah.
And we are going to go mount the world as one unified Dothraki stallion.
Yeah.
So ultimately, yes, but it feels like what's supposed to be happening for her is over at Meereen, and she's supposed to be building her army, and this feels like a distraction from that.
It's just crazy how she was one of the most popular characters in the beginning, and people have really turned against her. Like, they just don't like her story.
It's just because she's not as interesting stripped of power.
Yeah.
If she's not in the throes of power,
I think she's more interesting
to make decisions
as this.
It's not as engaging.
Because to me, when she had power, it was the same thing every friggin' episode. She would just go into a new town, free all the slaves, and kill all the leaders. And it was the same story every single time for her.
But she had something to do.
And she had a way to be powerful and bad. When she's badass and her dragon is burning through Astapor? One of the cities. I don't know. Through the city. That's badass. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's a little, you know, she's defiant now, but she can't do much except just sort of hang out.
I think.
Well, just having Tyrion as part of her story is going to make it interesting.
And that's where I think this will help too. Is
Man,
they
it was awesome this episode.
they needed to get her out of Meereen.
Yes.
So that Tyrion and the spider had more to do there.
Yeah.
And had more of a story to continue with there.
Yeah, the sort of detective.
Yeah, story. Yeah. And the Tyrion spider combo is great. Like, those two actors are just great. Yeah.
I'm going to jump in really quick, though. The scene of him with Marae, I don't know her name, the chick, the, like, second to Daenerys, like, her...
Oh, yeah.
Her
yeah,
chick,
yeah, yeah.
And then the head of the Unsullied.
Yeah.
That scene is so great when he's trying to get them to drink or play a game. Or it was just hilarious.
Absolutely. Sorry, so good.
Just wanted to jump in with
that. That's cool. That's cool. That was a lot of Thrones talk. We'll jump into Captain America because Josh is now reading the nutritional facts of the dark chocolate-covered power berries on the back of his Trader Joe's.
I just had a lot of flavor.
What are power berries?
I'm assuming they're blueberries. They look like blueberries.
Let's talk about what's...
Oh, they have acai, pomegranate, cranberry, and blueberry juice, and they're dipped in smooth dark chocolate.
All good for you.
All right. Wow. All those antioxidants.
Let's talk about this little movie called Spider-Man Civil War. I mean, sorry.
Ken Burns,
Captain America
Civil War. There you go. Ken Burns presents.
Marvel's Civil War. What'd you guys think?
I mean, it was okay. I'm just kidding. I loved it.
I thought it was good.
I need to see it again. I mean, I don't know. I didn't even, like, I wasn't taken to that much giggling and holy shitting, even in Force Awakens, just because Force Awakens is a different, like...
It's a different animal.
A different kind of therapy.
Yeah.
But
spoilers, by the way. I'm going to say this right now. Spoilers.
I mean, there's just...
They fight each other.
We
and
live
the Avengers
in this,
win.
Like I keep saying, we live in peak nerd where things, even for their flaws, things are happening that you just never thought you would see.
Yeah.
And God forbid, I don't know where we're going to be in film in 40 years because the, like, not the financial bubble, but it's an arms race. Like I've said before.
Yeah.
And what's going to be left? Like, there's just... Coming out of that movie, even though I loved it, I told Kyle, I was like, I feel like I need to go home and, like, put on Garden State. Like, just to, like, I need to take a downer. Like, I need to, like, turn... Yeah, like, it's
just
so...
to balance something out.
So much. Like, I wanted to see
it
again
before... It was sensory overload.
Yeah, I wanted to see it again before we talked, just so I would have a better sense of the thing. But you can't deny how transcendent, in a way, it was.
It was, and it's, but you're right, like, but we've talked about this many times before, if comic books movies want to survive, they need to start scaling back and making smaller movies, which Deadpool's proved
well,
that.
You know, I forgot.
This was very much not.
Yes.
No,
and I forgot.
But it couldn't have been.
I forgot last Friday after we saw it, that's what I said too. I woke up the next morning, and I realized why, another reason why Force Awakens was a $900 million movie. It was restraint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
These movies don't, like, there was not restraint left on the table in Civil War. Not that there should have been. I mean, like, I would suffer through almost anything for that airport sequence.
Oh, man.
But the airport sequence was great.
But I think what we're saying is if, like, Doctor Strange has to be a relief. Like, that has to be smaller scale. Like, Ant-Man and the Wasp, when we get there, has to be, like, a breath of fresh air, like
they need to stop. They need to stop threatening the whole world and just threaten small scale.
Well, but my biggest issue with Civil War because there was never a threat to the whole world in this, really.
No,
right.
No,
which is nice. And there's no city destroyed. There's no
right. Yeah. Right, which is great. I like.
A little bit of
I appreciate.
It's a
bit
threat
of a
to the team. It's
a
building
was
a
threat.
The
yeah, it's a threat
part
to the
of
team.
A building.
Yeah. Although my issue, I have a couple issues. One is, and we talked about this a little bit, I think 2 weeks ago. I never really feared for anybody's life. You know, this was never going to end super badly because they all have to show up for
Avengers.
Avengers.
No.
Right.
My other issue is
there was probably killed Hawkeye.
Just too much. There were too many people. There was one point where it was 6-on-6. There were 12 superheroes on the screen at once fighting.
Yeah.
Which is incredible and amazing and a little overkill. Like, I felt like I could have lost Vision and Scarlet Witch and it wouldn't hurt the movie. I could have lost Hawkeye and it wouldn't hurt the movie. You know, they're probably... Now, I loved Black Panther.
He was great.
Spider-Man was amazing.
Yep.
But I feel like you could have... I feel like you could have taken out, like, 4 of those superheroes and just focused on a slightly smaller group.
I don't think that would have been as... I get it, because I also was exhausted, but I don't think... I think if you... If we spent 2 years anticipating a movie where we knew it was going to be 3-on-3, there wouldn't have been the
Barrel of Monkeys excitement.
They definitely scaled down.
But you know what I mean? Like, you have to, if we're going to Hometown Buffet, we're going to Hometown Buffet. Don't tell me we're going.
My problem is less with the fight being that many people, although Vision did almost nothing in the actual battle.
Except almost kill Rhodey.
Well, there's that.
Yeah.
It's with the rest of the movie. Like, the digression about, like, we should order pizza. I've never eaten food.
Yeah, you know, like,
I feel like that could have been better spent somewhere else.
Probably, okay. But it just...
Okay. Possibly, but I think they did, all things considered, a pretty damn good job threading the needle of making almost everybody have something to do or have some import, minus, like, Hawkeye. He just kind of.
Although I like
and Ant-Man.
I like
shows up.
Yeah, but it's awesome, right. Which is the thing,
and he gets
Ant-Man.
A funny line or two, and,
yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah, we get to see Giant Man.
Yeah, God, that was amazing.
I love
Hawkeye's line though when he says, "I retire for 5 minutes and just everything goes to shit."
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, it's like, it's because they're still playing up on that joke that Hawkeye's the glue that holds the team together.
Right.
Yeah.
He's not at all, obviously, but it's still a fun joke. It's still a fun gag that they have in the movie, and I love this. See, when they arrest, was it? It's like Hawkeye, and the guys are against Iron Man, basically, and Ant-Man's behind the cell.
Yeah.
What does he say? What does he say?
Right? He goes, it's like, Pym said, never trust a star.
Yeah.
Who are you again?
Yeah, who are you again?
Come on.
The one thing they did a good job of, even if you trimmed all the fat, is that it was legitimately like a Captain America story.
Yes.
So you can get away with calling it Captain America
3. I'm glad you said that.
Yes.
I'm glad you said that, because I was telling you guys, I'm like, yeah, this, everybody wants to call this Avengers 2.5, and I'm like, maybe 2.1, but this is very much Captain America's movie. Like, he's the reason. Yeah, the reason.
That's why I would argue, too, that in a way this was a more scaled-back Marvel movie. Yes, it had huge fight sequences, visuals, and everything, but at its core, it's a smaller movie. It's a movie about...
Compared to Avengers.
You know, Captain's relationship with Bucky and how that puts the team in jeopardy.
It definitely had more weight to it and better narrative plot drive than Ultron. Even though I never thought Tony Stark was going to die... The movie did do a good job of keeping me enthralled, and that the moment the Cap's coming down with his shield Tony's helmet's off, I'm like, he's about to be decapitated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, in that moment, I was like, holy.
This is real.
Damn. And they did a good job of making me feel the intensity, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I thought when Tony sees his parents murdered by the Winter Soldier, I really believed he was going to kill them because he killed my mom. I love that line. He says, he killed my mom.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, it was awesome. Plus the early scene.
That actually saved, in some ways, the movie for me, because it ended up being the thing that I feared going in, that it was that Bucky, quote unquote, did something that, of course, he didn't do because he was framed. Therefore, the other side's argument is just completely fucking wrong.
Yeah.
Now, it was that, but there was this other thing that he was the one who killed his parents.
Yeah.
So he had this other reason, even if he was completely wrong in what he was doing, or not necessarily why he was doing it, but even if this going after Bucky was in and of itself wrong, he had this other personal reason for doing it.
And I love that you bring that up about Bucky too, because doesn't Tony ask him, "Do you even remember her?" And he's like, "I remember all of them."
Right.
Yeah. Like that's a great,
which is a powerful line.
Because,
because
Bucky, even though he's not in control of what he's doing, he sees what he's doing.
Yeah. Like,
he can
he knows.
Feel
it was
Sebastian really Stan. Sebastian Stan was fantastic.
Oh, so good.
I didn't really like the tag. It was funny when they're putting Winter Soldier back in the MacGuffin shed. Like, we'll put you back there for another movie. Like, see you.
We don't really have anything
to do with you now, so we'll just see you
but
in
he's
like
in,
three movies.
He's in contract
but he's in Wakanda.
Right? Well, and he's in contract for 9 movies, I think.
Total. Sebastian Stan?
I think so. Yeah.
He'll be back for Black Panther.
Well, he's really popular.
And that's kind of like, I don't know. I don't want that to be the plot of Black Panther if it's like.
It's not
Black Panther.
No.
Or
they'll
if it's
say
like,
Bucky for the third act, he'll come in.
And Ulysses Claw going into like, I don't know.
Just, don't be upset till we get there, Josh.
Yeah, but
because so far they every time that you guys have feared, they've done a pretty good job at.
Yeah,
you know, even with Kyle, they did the exact same thing that he was saying, but he still enjoyed it.
To me, yeah. Black Panther is the biggest test now, just because. He was such a serious character, was good, which was great for that movie. You need that to balance out everybody else. But if I spend 2 hours with that guy, I'm going to feel like I'm at a DC movie. I'm just kidding.
No,
but
no,
you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how that movie played.
But
that's
an interesting point. Because here's the thing about this movie.
Because Comic Relief would fill out a place with him.
Is
right.
Yeah.
There's Captain. There's Stark.
Yep.
I almost called him Ned. Not Rob Stark. What's his name? Tony Stark.
Tony Stark.
And there's Black Panther. Did anybody else actually have, like, a full character arc in the movie?
Oh, yeah. No, I think. I felt like they did.
Like,
Say that again.
Captain America.
Yeah.
He changed from the beginning of that movie to the end.
Black Panther.
Right.
Black Panther did.
Yeah.
He's,
right.
You know, I'm fucking revenge.
I know.
You know what? I'm okay. You know, I don't want to become like you, asshole. And then Tony Stark.
I think Winter Soldier had a full arc there.
Yeah. Winter Soldier definitely did.
Because
he started making his own decisions. He came to a place by the end. Vision.
That's true. He chose to be frozen away. That's a fair point.
You have to weigh things proportionally, too. I mean, you have your A's and B's. Characters.
No, totally.
But I think,
but
I feel like Vision actually had an arc, like, in
Spider-Man.
I think so.
It was almost like they're completing Vision's arc from Ultron, almost. Not completing, but fleshing it out more. You're right.
Yeah.
Vision changed because he realized, you know,
he realized he was distracted. He had
emotions. Yeah, his last moment was like, I didn't know I was capable of, like, Tony was like, I didn't think you were capable of that. It's like, I didn't think I was.
Here's my question with that, though. Why are we taking away credit from fucking dodging that fucking thing? Like, he just dodged it. Like, I know, like, he blamed Vision for that missing him, but he aimed right at him and fucking just dodged it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he can control his beam in midair. He doesn't have the force.
Yeah.
So I didn't like that line. I was like, why are you blaming Vision for that? He didn't.
I think,
fucking dodge the fucking bullet.
Right.
I mean, it was just,
right.
Yeah.
But my point was not that the movie failed all of these other characters.
Right.
Because most of these other characters were just there to fight in the battle. You know?
Yeah.
Hawkeye was there just to fight in the battle. Ant-Man was there just to fight in the battle.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Even Spider-Man was, for the most
part.
You know,
I would say so, too. Yeah. The thing Spider-Man learned was, hey, look, I can play with the big boy.
Which, you know, it's cool you said that, because in the comic book series, obviously, it encompassed 75 different issues, single issues of comics. And I have all 75. And they had, but there was an 8-issue series that was just that.
Right.
All the superheroes coming in. But Captain America and Iron Man were the focus of that story.
Right.
Even though these guys all came in. And everything was happening on the side, you know, in other comic books.
Black Widow had to make decisions
stories.
And change a little bit.
I was going to say.
She did.
But.
Yeah.
This is more reinforces how much we need a Black Widow movie, which I think
absolutely. Fucking absolutely.
Will come out and say they're getting one.
We have for a while.
Yes.
But my point is not to denigrate them. You can only focus. If there's 12 characters, you can't give them all a full story.
Right,
no.
Like, they had a hard enough time. They tried to do that in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
And it didn't. They ended
up
cutting
most
of the stuff that could have maybe made that work.
Right. Yeah.
But my point is to get around it to in the most circuitous way possible.
It's all right. We got plenty of time.
Black Panther went from the "I'm super serious. I'm gonna kill this guy" to the okay, I see what revenge does to somebody. Oh, God, I need to lighten the fuck up.
So awesome. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So he'll be able to start the next movie in sort of, I think, a better place.
Right.
Then he won't be quite left as, or yeah. spent quite most as of this serious. Movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was telling Josh.
Plus, yes, he's the leader of his people now.
I was telling Josh the other day how much I love that line that he has when he says, "You know, revenge has consumed you; it's consuming them."
You know, he did have one flash of like some panache, where he was like going to the limo, and then like his body
that was
lady
cool.
was
the bodyguard.
Like,
oh, yeah.
It was like the Black Widow, like, "I'll fight you," and he was like, "I would like to see that."
Yeah, that was
pretty good. I'm like, oh, okay, I don't know why the, this guy have some stuff in common.
All right.
I don't know but, why the Wakandian dude is some weird Italian dude. I don't
even know. I'm going to fight.
Ant-Man was baller.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to, and you should talk the most about this. We're running out of time, but like.
Oh, we got time.
Spider-Man was great.
Yes.
I went into that movie like excited that they're going to use him, but not feeling like I needed more Spider-Man.
No, they gave you just enough.
It.
Yeah.
But like, and I was never that into the Spider-Man movies to begin with.
Yeah.
But love the dude.
Yeah. Oh, man.
From like,
oh,
from
so,
go.
So perfect. Yeah.
Yes.
I do want to talk a little bit about Spider-Man because, like I said, I was so excited for you guys to see Tom Holland do his thing. And I'll try a couple of my favorite moments, but. A little side note to the Ant-Man and Josh Moorhead. I was sitting only a couple seats over from Josh, and every time Ant-Man did something awesome, Josh was just a explosive laughter and clap. I mean, I loved it. He felt the way I felt during Spider-Man. I loved how much Ant-Man, because Ant-Man is such a great character, right? And like, Paul Rudd is fantastic.
Paul Rudd is good in everything, and Ant-Man fangirls over Captain America as soon as he gets out of the van. It's hilarious.
Yeah,
it's just the right amount, too. Moment.
I'm shaking your hand way too long.
Then he grabs his biceps.
Thank you for thanking
like,
me.
Oh. Yeah.
So, yeah. But it just made me so happy to hear Josh so happy during those scenes, especially when he turned into a giant man. You went nuts when he turned into giant dead.
Yeah.
But Tom Holland was a great Spider-Man.
Oh my God.
Yes.
And I mean,
and
I
a great Peter Parker. That's the thing. He had both.
I liked what Tobey Maguire did. I was okay with what What's-His-Face did.
Andrew Garfield.
I just didn't like those movies. Those movies were terrible, I think.
Yeah.
No,
that's
fine. That's fine.
But he was perfect. Like, he's the best Spider-Man I've seen.
He finally looks the age. Like, Tobey Maguire did not look like a high school kid in first Spider-Man.
Right.
Andrew Garfield, I think, was even older than Tobey Maguire was when he got cast.
But I would say Tobey Maguire was a better Peter Parker, and I would say Andrew Garfield was a better Spider-Man.
I would agree with that.
Because
Andrew Garfield was really good.
Tom Holland is better than both of them.
Better at both. Because
he's good at both.
Yes.
The thing is, what you can do, what Marvel can do, what they've set themselves up so well for at this point is when you're making just a Spider-Man movie, you have to get Tobey Maguire. You have to get, again, I cannot remember his fucking name.
Andrew Garfield.
You have to get the orange cat guy.
Yeah.
When you're introducing him in Civil War, a movie that's led by half a dozen major stars, you can cast somebody who nobody knows who he is. Like, have I seen him in anything before?
No.
Exactly.
He was in The Impossible, and what was
which
the other?
Apparently he's great, but I haven't.
He just read something else he was in. I didn't even know he was in it.
So,
I have
not
seen him.
There's
a couple big things he's been in, but
he's fairly unknown.
No, he's a fresh-faced.
Yeah. So they can do that. They
he's
can find somebody who's just perfect at that role.
Right.
They don't have to find somebody who's good at that role, but really they're famous so they can headline a movie and we'll be okay then.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't need to be perfect for the role as long as he can bring in enough audience. You know, they can just find the guy who's like, this is the guy.
Yeah.
I like that. That's a really good point.
I mean, I could sit here. I mean, you guys know how much I love BVS, but I also love this movie. I love this movie more. I will admit this is better. This is a better movie, and I knew it was going to be. Like, never in my mind when they were talking about how, you know, it made I think 15 million more opening weekend domestically than BVS, and I think worldwide it made like 100 million more. Something
I think
like
worldwide it's already like
it's at like
I guess I heard
600.
Yeah,
it's already 600. Yeah, and BVS I think was only like 540 or 520 or something.
Well, that's the crazy thing is BVS is 800 overall right now.
Well, yeah, because
it
slowed down after the
second weekend,
which Captain America won't as much. Like it's going to have a steep decline next week, but it's not going to be like BVS. It'll probably lose half, maybe at the most.
Yeah.
Right. But the reason I was going to say this is because I never in my mind thought Batman versus Superman had any chance of beating Captain America 3. Like I knew once these movies were announced, what they were about. how many characters are we going to have in Captain America 3? The minute they announced Spider-Man was going to be in it, I was like, okay. I'm not going to say it underperformed, but I actually thought it was going to make over $200 million this weekend. I really did.
Well,
and that's not saying it's a bad thing. Like, I'm not saying $181 million is awesome.
No, absolutely. It's the highest opening weekend ever.
And it's going to top out at even higher. It's going to go over a billion.
Not to pile more shit onto BVS, but I feel like I would have liked Civil War a little more had I not seen BVS.
Because it is similar. It's a very similar story.
It's a similar theme of, you know, superhero versus superhero because, you know, they're on different sides of something.
Because stuff.
Because marketing. Not really because marketing. No. I mean, not at least. Definitely not in the Marvel one. I don't think so. That's not the intention, I don't think, with the
DC. I don't think so.
The intention there was we need to bring in Batman and Superman and we're creating this universe. It was a ground laying. And there's part of me that wonders if maybe that did affect the box office a little bit. Like, we just saw superheroes fight and we didn't like it, or it wasn't as good as we wanted it to be, or it was okay, but we just watched it.
I would say that paired with the semi-disappointment in Ultron. But look, there's no way to look at $186 million opening and say that's a disappointment.
Absolutely.
I didn't say
it was a disappointment.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm saying in general. Like,
I'm just saying when people like... And it makes good news. Like, when people say, Captain America obliterated BBS's opening weekend. And because obviously they were competing, because that's what these two companies have been doing since 1963, whenever Marvel finally started selling comic books at a good rate.
Yeah.
And because it's happened three times now. Because it's happened three times now, unfortunately, like, the new business standard is like, you have a monster hit on your hands if you cross $200 million, but that should be the exception to the rule.
I agree with you.
Like, it's happened.
When I was saying
twice,
that's
where the bar is at now, and we should bring the bar back down to about $175 million. Like,
so you have to have the top five movie ever.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, it's unfair to put this expectation. Because I tell you, like, there's no way. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, if you're Rian Johnson, I would feel incredibly relieved. Because even if my movie makes, like, $500 million less, like, Star Wars put the bar so far out there. It'd be like every other NBA player thinking they have to be Michael Jordan. You can't. You just got to be what you are.
And we've already discussed this, too, because you said it the other day. Someone was saying, well, you and I were talking about this, how we said there's nothing's going to beat Star Wars opening weekend, at least not in the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
And someone came out, you really think so? I was like, there's no way, because there's nothing coming.
Not until episode nine.
Yeah, no. There's nothing. That,
maybe. But
there's nothing,
like,
there's nothing event-wise coming.
You just have to adjust expectations.
Well, I feel like the only movies that have that 180, 190, 200-plus expectation are Marvel. Specifically Marvel massive team-up movies.
Right, yeah.
And this met that expectation. This was over $180 million. That's gigantic.
Right.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because the only movie that's come out in the last decade plus for Star Wars is fucking insanely
good.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the word I'm looking for? Jurassic World.
And that
the next Jurassic World
either.
Will have that expectation, but that will not
happen. No, it won't happen again.
Because there's a lot of people who didn't like Jurassic World.
Yeah, it's the same reason the next Star Wars movie,
and I'm not even talking Rogue One, I'm talking Episode 8.
Right.
The same reason neither of those will reach that again is because we just saw a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, even when 8 comes out, it'll be, a year ago we just got a Star Wars
movie.
And the casual fans that went out to see it aren't going to go out in droves to see Rogue One.
Yeah, they'll take their time.
Both Civil War and BVS should be applauded for their box office hauls. I'm sure this place where we're sitting right now, Warner Brothers, is a little disappointed because they probably left at least $200 or $300 million on the table with not.
They did.
With. Even if it's.
But it wasn't a failure.
With a perception.
No, it wasn't a failure.
And we shouldn't, like. I'm obsessed with box office numbers and stuff, but if we come to. Like, if Alice in Wonderland 2. It was so weird that Alice in Wonderland 1 got $1 billion worldwide.
Yes.
But if that movie opens with...
because Johnny Depp worldwide is huge.
Yeah.
But if that movie opens with a $75 million weekend, nobody should say what a terrible disappointment.
No,
that's a lot.
I'll be surprised if it makes that, especially because it's opening up against X-Men.
X-Men's a better example. Because
X-Men has higher expectations.
Well, yeah, because now there's a superhero bar that it falls under. And apparently, I want to drop these two blurbs, but if that movie opens with, like, less than 125, it shouldn't be totally shit on, because Days of Future Past was the highest grossing one, and it only had like 260 or something
to total. Yeah,
yeah.
No, X-Men movies expectations are a little lower because I don't think they cost up in the 150 200 million range either.
No, so, and they haven't been amazing in a while.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just kind of so Scott Mendelson, who's my favorite reviewer, I think, and maybe someday, hopefully, we can get him on here because we're Facebook friends. X-Men Apocalypse is a franchise-killing disaster. That's his headline. And Batman vs. Superman and Captain America Civil War realize the error of their combative ways and unite in the third act to defeat a menace that threatens all superhero comic book movies, X-Men Apocalypse.
Ouch.
So apparently it's like bad or something.
Wow.
No, according to Scott, like I said, I read some reviews.
Reviews are mixed.
Yeah, I've read some good reviews for it too, because I read the Slash film had about 20, 30 reviews and then 10 or 15 tweets.
Oh, okay.
And they were half and half. Like, they represented it well. But a lot of them were saying the same kind of thing, like, with BVS. They were just saying it's a little overstuffed. But then, when like we were saying earlier, when the good is good, it's really good.
Yeah.
So
we're just, like, we're going to watch so many cities get destroyed this summer.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Dude, yeah.
Well,
they said
all
X-Men
of
Apocalypse,
the cities for Independence Day.
Well, they said X-Men Apocalypse, including the moon base, they mutilate people with glee. And it's not even, like, off-screen deaths like in Man of Steel. It's like we're seeing these people get destroyed.
Oh, man.
So, but anyway, we're going to wrap this up, but I just wanted to wrap it up with my thoughts on Civil War, or Spider-Man in general. There was three moments where that movie just made me so happy. Two of them involved Spider-Man. One was the best Spider-Man Peter Parker moment in all, we'll count this kind of as a movie, all six versions of Spider-Man, because there's been three Tobey Maguire's, two Andrew Garfield's, which I like all five movies, even though Spider-Man 3 has flaws, and Amazing Spider-Man 2 has flaws. But
he does this moment where
Tony's about to turn around and tell Aunt May his secret, and he just,
don't tell May.
Yeah.
Like, that moment was so Peter Parker, so Spider-Man that I got goosebumps, I got teary-eyed, and I was like, oh, they're going to do this right. And then the part I couldn't wait for you guys to hear when they're at the airport, and he's like, did you guys see that old movie? Empire Strikes Back! Yeah. How old is this kid? Oh, I didn't carbon date him. Like, it was... All his moments and all his banter with the superheroes were so, like, he was so wide-eyed, and he was just like,
he
had a great line where he tells Captain America, he's like, you're wrong, you think you're right, or something like that, that makes you dangerous. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Or you think you're right, that makes you dangerous. And then the other, I mean, everything Spider-Man was great, so I could talk about Spider-Man for hours. But the other part I liked about the movie didn't involve Spider-Man. I loved, and this is how you make the Black Panther movie a little bit better, or give it some comic relief, some levity. I love the bro hate manse between Winter Soldier and Falcon.
Oh yeah,
like they're just so many good. You couldn't have done that earlier. I hate you. You know, it's like, can you move your seat up? No. Like, they just those moments were like so good.
Those were good moments.
Yeah. And I think if you bring Falcon in, because it would make sense to have him like there because he's a military guy like Cap, and
you can just say because he's black.
Well, I was going to say that.
And like Obama.
Because that's where Obama's from, right?
He's a Wakandan Muslim.
Another great moment, though, and this was worth his presence in the movie, was Ant-Man when he throws throw this at this.
Yeah,
and right. Throws the truck.
Yeah.
And then he throws the thing. He's like, I thought it was a water truck.
Here's my one question that I was trying to place. So doesn't Falcon say, I know a guy, because they're talking about how they're going to get their shit back?
Yeah. The guy was Ant-Man.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why they needed Ant-Man. But when they go, they get their stuff back from Emily Van Camp, though, right?
From Sharon Carter. Yeah.
So was that a screw-up? Or what?
I think he was saying, I know a guy for backup, not to get our stuff.
Not to get our stuff back. But it just happened. Oh, okay. It happened in that scene.
Yeah.
But that's why you probably got
it. I thought that's why they had to go out of their way to get him, because it's like, oh, I know a guy. Because one rumor that I read that ended up not being true is that I read that, like, there was a point where, like, Winter Soldier's locked up, and they're like, oh, we need to get Ant-Man to break him out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But, anywho.
Which would have made the movie another 25 minutes longer.
Yes. Right.
Yes. Can we also mention how good Zemo's villain is too? Daniel Brühl as Zemo.
Apparently, he's.
I didn't like him.
He's.
I really? Like the performance.
Well,
but
because
I
know the character.
Yeah.
If you don't know the character, I think that's a really intriguing villain. That one they did not kill.
Yes.
So he can do shit later, and he is obviously
he will do shit later.
He's a good manipulator, and he he is a good warrior. So.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Like, he is, it's that kind of Machiavellian machination, like, behind-the-scenes guy. Like, I'm gonna pull these strings and then let them fight just because
I want to
see
them. Well,
because
he had that great
line
at the end.
He was cookie-cutter.
Where Hobbit is like, he didn't win. And he's
he
like,
was cookie-cutter. He was worthless.
Did I? Yeah.
Martin Freeman was worthless unless he's going to come back later.
He'll better believe he's going to have a huge part to play in Infinity War.
He's the new Coulson.
Yeah.
In a
or
sense,
Nick
yeah.
Fury, because...
Yeah.
He's Fury Coulson.
Fury Coulson.
Yeah.
Attorney at law.
So, what do we
That.
Exactly.
Right there.
You're right. We should talk about Lost for an hour.
No, we can wrap it up. We're going a little long here, but that's okay. There was some amazing stuff to talk about. I mean, how could we not talk about how awesome that movie was and how great the
Sorry, I went a little long on your mom this weekend.
Woo!
Everybody!
Oh, man!
Just
making it harder for Kyle to cut. Yeah.
And on that bombshell.
just a real quick announcement, though. We are now going to be posting our pods on Tuesdays because Kyle came up with a brilliant idea, and I don't know why we haven't thought of this before, but that's why Kyle's the leader. He mentioned that we should start podding on Mondays or Tuesdays so we can have the weekend stuff.
Yeah, we're going to pod Monday evenings and it'll go up Tuesday morning.
Yeah, exactly.
That way we can talk about, for me really, it's so we can talk about Game of Thrones.
And podding Josh's mom on the weekends.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Got your mom digging.
We are putting her in a pot full of soil and we will be sure to water her.
Hey, Josh, come sit down. We're going to say goodbye right now.
Twice on Sundays?
Prune occasionally, I guess.
Maybe.
But anyway, so, all right. Kyle, since you did the intro, you want to lead the outro?
Sure. This is the way we nerd. With us, as always, to my right.
Josh.
Across
Daniel
from him.
Villalobos.
Joshua Potter.
They just all talked over me introducing them or out-traducing them.
Outro.
I just out-traduced all of you.
That's a good one.
Hell yeah. I am Kyle Bound, and this is The Way We Nerd. Thanks for listening. If you want more from the nerds, check us out on the intertubes at thewaywenerd.com. And if you haven't already, you should follow us on Facebook and Twitter at The Way We Nerd, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week... This is the way we nerd.